You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Take us in, Aaron.
I'll take us in. Yes. Good afternoon. We are broadcasting from Roberta's Restaurant on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Unfiltered with Aaron and Brian DeMarco.
Welcome, welcome. It's a good, beautiful day. It's not 110 degrees today.
Not today, no. And we have some excellent wines from Austria, which we'll be cooling down with throughout the program as well. But before we get started, just wanted to touch upon a week in wine article. And
what have you found?
lots of news, but honing in on one which sort of touches the wine industry and the restaurant industry as well, and also gives a shout out to one of our colleagues and friends, Bruce Schneider, who started Gotham Project last year, April 2010, talking about wine tap. So the system is being installed at a growing number of restaurants, you know, largely in the locavore sort of spots, for first tap dispensing Riesling at Terroir Tribeca.
Correct.
Trying to change the way Americans drink wine. So it's not just sort of selling the concept, but trying to make it more of a sustainable sort of practice.
Well, it's interesting. I met Bruce many years ago in Long Island when he was working at his winery in the North Shore. And then I was actually on a trip to Germany with Bruce, where we talked about this at length on some road trip through the Mosel. And he was explaining to me that, because I was, you know, having worked in the beer business before, my question was, do you have to clean the tap lines the same way you would with beer? And how would you maintenance, whose responsibility would it be? And how would you maintenance, you know, so you had the best, freshest experience at the restaurant, you know, for the consumer? Because, you know, with a bottle of wine, every bottle of wine, you know, hopefully has the same consistency. You know, obviously there's potential to have corked bottles and things like that. So, but I think from a, you know, consumer standpoint, and from especially a restaurateur standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to have tapped wine. And do you see that that's the trend that people are trying to jump on?
I do. I mean, I was at Red Rooster last Monday up in Harlem, which was a really fun experience. And
Marcus Samuelson's
Marcus
place?
Samuelson, yep, who also actually just did a great event in the Hamptons this past weekend called the Taste of Two Forks. So bringing together lots of restaurants and wineries. But they had the Gotham Project that Bruce Schneider, they had two different ones. They had the rosé and they had the white. And really reasonably priced. I think it was $7 a glass. So kind of sets off this notion like, sure, yeah, why not try it? And using a lot of grapes from the Finger Lakes and the North Fork as well. So trying to also bring home that idea of drinking more locally, and then the eco-friendliness of just the kegs as well and less bottles. So it's a good argument.
I mean, I think the eco-friendly is one thing, but also the cost savings of not having the packaging and essentially the marketing involved with the bottles. You know, you probably save about $1 a bottle, and so that can hopefully be passed along to the customer.
Right.
So that's interesting.
Well, I imagine it'll be something that we'll see more of in the next couple of years as well.
Well, good. Yeah. So I'll take the liberty to introduce our guest who's in town from the warm climate of Virginia and D.C., but he is Austrian by birth, Mr. Klaus Wittauer from KW Selections in the studio. Say hello, Klaus.
Well, hello. Hello, Brian. Thank you. Yes, I tried to bring some cool air from Austria with me, so... I didn't come straight from Virginia and a little stop in Austria and bought some. You know, we are too hot down there and they're too cold in Austria. Somewhere in between.
So for those of you who are not familiar with Austrian wines, so we've done, what, three shows now? This is our third show about Austria.
Yeah, we are killing it with Austria. Loving it over at the Heritage Radio Network Austria.
I think it's a trend that people are getting on. But obviously, Grüner Veltliner is the grape that most people associate with Austria. But today we're going to talk about some really incredible Pinot and some other stuff. But Klaus, tell me, you know, for those of you who don't know exactly where Austria is in the world, they know it's somewhere between Germany and near Italy, but isn't the parallel something growing region?
It's on the same latitude as Burgundy and as Oregon, but you already got one step ahead because there's no kangaroos, so it's Austria, not Australia. So that's usually
Australia?
No, you didn't. you were okay, but that's usually the first thing. And then most people just think of Austria as German because we speak German, but we are much closer to Italy, your home, where you come from.
Right.
And the wines from Austria tend to be not sweet, and that's my biggest challenge in... Even so, I love German wines, but Austrian wine is a different category. And Grüner Veltliner is a grape. Doesn't sound as sexy as Pinot Grigio, but...
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's... I think the Pinot Grigio has become so commonplace that it's... I think people associate it with Italy, but it's become almost, it's like Chardonnay at this point. And so, you know, I think in the last... And we'll get into this, but, you know, I want to talk about your background a little bit first, but... Aaron, we've seen how many restaurant lists where Grüner is now, you know, on
flying
off the glass. Yeah. It's on every restaurant list in the city, and it's something
that's this city. But
I know we're definitely spoiled. I mean, we're, you know, to compare it to Chardonnay in our little world of it, or our little but big world of New York is maybe an overstatement. However, it is quite a comment.
Well, I think it's a simple reason. You're a city with a lot of restaurants and a lot of food and new trends, and Austrian wines happens to go very well with the new kind of cuisine.
Right.
And especially Grüner Veltliner is a variety which the sommeliers and especially chefs in my business, when I go and sell wines in two restaurants in the wine trade, I love when I go to a restaurant and I hear the chef is the wine buyer because I know I have a sure sale because as soon as he tastes the different styles of Grüner, his mind starts going and this recipe, this goes with it, this goes with it. And that is what Austrian wine is about. And that's the new trend of restaurants. We have much more food-oriented. People are into healthy food. People are into Asian food. And
they're also into the, you know, small plates, the grazing, the taking the time over a couple hours as opposed to a really sort of formal dinner. And I think Grüner is in a very versatile, great variety to match a lot of those style dishes.
I say that in all of my wine classes and seminars, I say, you know, for wine parties, you know, you spend all this time in the kitchen or you go to this gourmet shop and buy and then you greet your guests with this big ass Chardonnay or Shiraz or Malbec. And by the time people sit down, they're full or tired or drunk.
Right, right.
But if you greet them with a nice, fresh
Klaus, sometimes
wine,
that's the objective at dinner parties.
To get them drunk, get them out the way.
Not for the Austrians.
But before we get ahead of ourselves, Klaus, tell us why you're uniquely qualified to even have this conversation about Austrian wine. Like, how are you here today? Tell me a little bit about your background so we can get moving and taste
Twitter, the Twitter version, right?
That's right. I mentioned that to you, yes.
In the car. Well, I'm Austrian, so my accent is real. I did go to hotel management school in Austria, worked in some of the top restaurants, ski resorts, summer resorts, and I went to Bermuda. And somehow, I met my wife in Bermuda, and that's how I came to the United States because she's American. But I've been working in restaurants, mostly French restaurants, and somehow with my background, I ended up always being in charge of wine lists. And at one point, when I did the wine trips to France and to Spain and to Italy, I always made a trip back home and tasted some of the Austrian wines and fell in love with them. Very simple.
So eventually you started an export company and...
Well, I knew being a sommelier, I had to have a few more things I need to learn about this business, just a sommelier buyer. There's a lot of things importing, and I always wanted to then import Austrian wine, so I started working in retail. It didn't take long that I had the biggest Austrian section on the East Coast. And one day my wife's, because most of those wines I had to drink, and it was 15, 16 years ago, and my wife saw one of the invoices, because I still had to pay, I was working for somebody, and she straight went to needless markup, because she said, "You're spending way too much money for this wine." She still has her shoes, my wine is gone. But that's when I decided...
Oh, Needless Markup. Is it Neiman Marcus?
Neiman Marcus.
Okay, Needless Markup. I like that.
Took him a while to get there.
I heard that.
Your wife shops there,
I'm
too.
I'm shocked that you have not heard that, actually.
I have heard it, but I didn't know that actually that's what he was saying.
Okay.
But that's okay. It's an Austrian accent, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I quickly said, I need to find a way how to bring some of the Austrian wines my friends in Austria drink to the United States, introduce them to some retailers and restaurants. I did try to get a job with some of the importers which imported Austrian wines then, but they said, we drink it ourselves, but we don't really sell them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks, but no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, in America, land of endless opportunities, you got to do it yourself. So exactly 11 years ago, June of 2000, I went to the Vivinum, which is a big wine fair in Austria. And I went there to find a winery which I could import, because by that time I changed my job to wholesale, and I worked for a wholesaler in Virginia. And one of the objectives for him to take me on was that I could import an Austrian wine for him. So
today, you know, you've brought, I think, arguably your anchor winery, probably one of the best wineries in the region from whence it comes, and a good friend to not only you but me and our business. And this is Anton Bauer.
Yes, I met Anton Bauer in June of 2000, and he was a little unknown winemaker in Austria in the Wagram region, which is not far from Vienna, right on the Danube. And I've really loved his wines. I tasted it up against some of the creme de la creme from Austria, and I thought his wines were great. We met there. We talked. He came 2 months later with a suitcase of samples. Those were the times where you still were able to travel with some wine.
Yeah.
We visit some of my customers. In 1 week, we sold 200 cases, and that's how my KW selection of Austria started and was born, and now we sell about 20 containers, 20,000 cases of Austrian wines. So we have grown from one pallet to something. And
that's amazing.
It's really still hard work, but as soon as people taste the wine, I think we should get something in the glass.
Yeah, well,
before we actually cut to any break, I mean, I want to try this Frizzante. And Klaus, tell us what Aaron is opening right now for those of us that can't.
And whether or not you choreographed your shirt to match the color of this sparkling Grüner.
It's a sparkling Grüner Veltliner, and as we all know, Prosecco is one of the hot things right now. So we thought, with Grüner Veltliner coming on, why don't we make a style of Prosecco style sparkling wine with just Grüner Veltliner? And this is what we are drinking now. This is a summer wine, but I wouldn't say just for the summer. You can drink it all year round. It's the perfect aperitif cocktail wine, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. Anytime.
Beautiful.
So
very golden yellow, sort of melon colored, and also with a screw cap, which was interesting.
Yes, we decided that we're not going to spend too much money with the cork, and screw caps are accepted. And I always find in a sparkling wine, you never can put the cork back in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And why don't we just use the screw cap? That was one of the samples we got from the winery. I saw that and I said, Tony, just let's
roll with this.
Let's roll with that.
It's funny because, you know, Aaron correctly noted that I probably think of New York outward. And so I'm thinking, oh, there's a lot of Austrian wine sold here in New York. But I think this is a unique product for our city dwellers because it's a screw top. It's sparkling. perfect for Central Park, perfect for Prospect Park here in Brooklyn. And this looks like a quick buy with a couple plastic cups, and you can have a nice little picnic here. Klaus, tell me what this wine would cost retail.
Well, it would retail for under $20. So it's in the Prosecco price range. Mm-hmm. All my producers are usually estate-grown quality. Austria is a very small country, so we're never going to be able to compete with Italy, Spain, or South America, Australia. I want to import quality wines. So this is Grüner Veltliner.
But it's non-vintage too, right?
We have no vintage on the label. It is a vintage. This is 2009. The juice comes from 2009 vintage. Right. But we don't specify it as a vintage in that.
And that's by choice?
Yes, it is by choice because we want to keep the consistency.
So there may be some blending. You may do, so you want to have the flexibility. And I don't think at this price point for this quality, I mean, this is delicious, by the way.
It is, yeah.
It's so fresh and,
I mean, champagne is usually non-vintage and costs a little bit more, doesn't it? Most of them.
Yes, well. So. Not what we drink on this show. Come on.
But yeah, the lovely pear notes. There's a nice ripe fruit quality to this, but also balanced by really bright acidity. So this is a fantastic wine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this one of my other winemakers, Karl Steininger, who is a specialist in Sekt, which is some of the Austrian equivalents to champagne, says that the CO2 elevates the fruit flavors. So what we wanted to keep, we wanted to start with a very good base product, which was very important for Tony to really use good quality Grüner Veltliner. And then when you do it's Chaumont method. So we pump in the CO2 in a big stainless steel container, but it has to be clean.
Right.
And you can hide a lot of with sugar, and we want it to be as low as possible. So we had to start off with a nice, good quality base product and then bring it out. But still make it easy to understand.
Sure.
Easy to drink.
It's dry, it's crisp, there's not a ton of residual sugar, but there isn't, there isn't that sort of, I wouldn't say that lack of character. There's some roundness to this, there's some texture to this, there's viscosity, and yet the frizzante isn't, it's not an overpowering.
It's mellow, yeah.
It's mellow, so it's definitely, I think, a sort of a summer.
Summer quaffer. Yeah.
Don't forget Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays.
Yes, exactly. Of course.
So we're going to sip on this and roll out with a short break and be back to taste some more Grüner. Cheers.
Played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, but then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang. Screwed up eyes and screw down hairdo, like some cat from Japan. He could lick 'em by smiling, he could leave 'em to hang. Became on so loaded man, well hung in snow white tan. So where were the spiders while the fly tried to
You are listening to Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com, broadcasting Tuesdays at 4 p.m. And here we are with Klaus Widauer, who's in town from Austria, and we have a nice lineup of Grüner Veltliner, that affable summer quaffer we just started with was a little...
Say that three times fast. Affable summer quaffer.
Mellow bubbles, and we started with that little sect from Austria, and moving on to a nice other lineup of Gruners. And I think another thing that we were talking about with the appeal of this particular Greifswald and popularity of it is that it's very, you know, reasonably priced for the quality as well, which is certainly not to be overlooked.
I mean, reasonably priced in terms of, you know, the not just the quality, but for what the production cost in Austria are much higher than, say, Chile or South America. This is not an inexpensive wine to make, yet we can sell it and deliver value, you know, in the terms of like a high, like a Sancerre quality for different grape variety, but I mean from the similar type of region. Do you think that this could be the Austrian Sancerre in that term?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Austria, you have to put it in perspective, is a very small country, fits in the size of Maine. Only one third of the country produces wine, and Grüner Veltliner is the most important grape variety. But the production cost, being so small, obviously, is much. And the great thing is, one question I have to you guys is, how many wineries do you think we have in Austria? And I give you a little hint. Australia, the big country Australia, has 2,000 wineries.
Okay.
The tiny little country Austria. I may have asked you the question already, but if you have a guess.
I'll take a guess, sure. I'd say about 220 wineries.
Who bottle wine?
Oh, now we're getting specific. Here we go. Like splitting hair. We are with a German, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, true.
Can we go higher?
A little higher, okay.
No.
Oh.
I think it's 5,000.
6,000.
Wow.
So it is a very small crafted industry. Vineyard owners, they're not winemakers.
Is it just mean that you guys
can't get along?
You can't get along enough in Austria to combine forces with where everyone has a point of view. There's enough different terroir that there's 5,000 expressions of a single varietal potentially.
Not necessarily. We have to look at it because each region works with a group and they work together. Joel tastes with John and they all work together to get higher qualities. But
so
they don't have somebody else coming them with a laptop and telling them the public wants this style of wine, produce that style. It's so wine growers.
Where the wines we're drinking this moment, tell us about the region they're coming from and the scope of like how many producers are in this region and the style of this wine in comparison to, say, the neighbors.
Well, we are in the region of Wagram, which is 2,700
hectares. What did you pour us so we can...
So we haven't poured anything yet.
I poured it. Aaron's right on the...
Gmurk is our number one selling Grüner Veltliner in the United States because it's good and because it has the right price point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single vineyard, which a lot of times you don't find in this price point. A wine which comes from one area. Gmurk is a Bohemian language, Gmirk, which means neighboring, and it's one single vineyard. Consistently, it tastes, the soil there has gravel. It's on the bottom of the hill, so it used to be ocean. We have a lot of rocks, so you got some nice minerality there, but you still have some good fruit and a nice soft finish, easy to drink. This is just like your everyday.
Yeah.
Come home. Put in a refrigerator before you start cooking. One glass for the cook, the next
in
the sauce.
Very light.
Right, this is it. This is
very
a
light.
This is a house wine. Perfect house wine.
And then where were they drinking?
And what's the next step up?
So
the next range up.
Then when you go up on the hill, what the Wagram is known for is loess, which is the sandy soil, and the sandy soil comes from the ice time, where the fine, very high winds and the crystals. It's just like sand, but the vines have to grow very deep to find the nutrition and also the water. So in the sandy soil, you always will find Grüner Veltliners, which are a bit more Burgundian in style. And if you look at the bottle, I'm sorry, the listeners cannot see the bottle, but the first bottle was more the Germanic style, the classic slick, tall bottle. And now we're going to like a Chardonnay Burgundy bottle because
rounder.
Mm-hmm. This is the style of the wine. This Grüner Veltliner gives you that creamy texture, some tropical fruit. And don't be afraid when we talk about fruit, because everybody always thinks it's sweetness. Fruit is completely different than sweet. It just gives you some nice aromas, Little pineapple.
Of course. I mean, this is the whole point of the of
great
the wine
minerality.
But you get the soil expression on this wine, I think, more pronounced. Yeah, it has a little more petrol notes as well, and sort of those trademark white pepper.
And what exactly are we drinking now, Klaus?
I have to drink it first. This is my favorite wine, my house wine. This is what I drink every day. Rosenberg. Rosenberg is the vineyard. So it's on the hill, single vineyard. Like I said, the vines have to go way, way, way down to find the water. And we have lower yield, more concentration. You said Sancerre earlier.
Yeah.
Sancerre. I always describe this wine as it has a little bit of that Sauvignon Blanc characteristic, but then it has a Viognier influence. So you got some of the tropical fruit.
But then that apple.
And then you get the green apple.
Yeah.
And then just a very pleasant. And this is the perfect example why Grüner Veltliner is hot in restaurants now. I mean, I can picture so many dishes, especially this weather right now, but all year round, where I can drink 1, 2, 3 glasses. And you know, restaurants got smart too.
Yeah.
They figure if we serve this wine, first of all, people drink 1 or 2 glasses more.
Right.
Second, they get hungry. Don't it just starts you going.
Revving up that
You want some food now. I want something. Where's the pizza? You said
this is your house wine and you drink it every day. You're probably using this wine as an appetizer because the food you're actually intaking is soaking up the alcohol you've been drinking all day. This is important, right?
You got me figured out, don't you?
I do have you figured out. This is perfect. But this is a really fabulous one. This is the Anton Bauer. What is it? Vintage specific 2000?
Anton Bauer, 2010, Rosenberg, Grüner Veltliner.
So
nice.
Single vineyard, Grüner from Austria, from Anton Bauer. And the next one you have for us, Klaus, tell us about this.
We're skipping one level from him right now because we don't want to confuse ourselves too much. We've been drinking already. But the next one is the Grand Reserve, which is Anton Bauer's expression of his best grapes, which he leaves out there till like November. So ultra ripe, meaning when you harvest riper grapes with more sugar, it doesn't mean that the wine is going to be sweeter. So it's not a dessert wine. It is just what we able to get with that is...
phenolic ripeness.
Physiological ripeness, completely rich texture, which a lot of other countries have to do in the cellar with oak aging and
other things that don't need to be named.
Yeah. Here we have a pure expression of the grape itself in the vineyard, completely ripe, and then done exactly the same way as the other two wines. Mm-hmm. There's no simple things. I mean,
and the thing that I notice about this,
Brian wants some of it.
You're teasing me. You're talking about such flowery notes.
Aaron,
the thing that I notice is this bottle is in a Burgundian bottle. It's dark glass, and it comes with a proper cork, which most of the other wines are coming under screw cap. So this is really Tony Bauer's way of putting this wine forward as almost a Burgundian wine. I mean, obviously the price point probably reflects these high-end additions.
Well, you sell some French wines too, so I have to be careful. But, you know, in Burgundy, on a Chassin Montrachet, Meursault, Poligny Montrachet, you would be paying close to $100 retail for this. But since we are in Austria...
No, but in a blind tasting, this, I think, could be mistaken for Burgundy.
It is.
Well, this is delicious wine, quite frankly. But the thing that's interesting, Klaus, is there is oak on here, or there's no oak in here?
Here, we have no oak. Tony Bauer used to make this wine with oak, but people like me and some other people in the wine business convinced him and say, hey, this grapes, because we tasted the wine fresh, and it doesn't need oak.
Right.
You have everything in the juice it needs.
Right.
It just... make it the same way as the other ones.
Amazing persistence.
That's concentration... Long on your on the palate. Mm-hmm. Of course, it wants different foods now. Now you have to have
something a little richer.
Yeah. Salmon, even lobster,
poultry.
White meats. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of veal.
I'm gonna have to get Roberta to make a foie gras pizza.
Yeah, I think so.
We need this.
Then I have to bring the ice wine.
Mm-hmm. So, Klaus, given that you're a man with numbers, do you have any sort of statistics to share with respect to the growth of Austrian wine in the U.S. or more specifically in New York over the past couple of years? Or
he does have these numbers. I know he does. Uh-huh. He's looking at me with the how high should he go?
No, I would just say to listeners, it's easy to find Austrian wine because we have our flag.
Yes.
Red, white, red on the top.
Yes, it is
so
easy.
And you see more and more of those in New York and around.
Yeah.
The second most important thing is when you look for an Austrian wine, you have to turn the bottle around. And if you see KW selection on the back,
then you know it's
a great wine because I picked it for you. So
yeah.
The numbers are amazing. Austria is now number three in exports. United States is number three in exports
really?
For Austrian wine.
Okay.
Germany is still number one. Uh-huh. Switzerland is number two. And then the United States is following. So it's a very important market for us. I don't know the exact statistics, but I know there's too many importers starting to bring in Austrian wine. So be careful who you choose from, like from any other country.
Who's an importer you recommend working with, Klaus?
Well, I think Barter House in New York does a pretty good job.
Only if he feeds you today, then we'll talk.
But
this wine, I love.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
This wine is world class. I think it could be on any table, and people would freak out and not know.
And what's the retail price on this?
This one would go for just about $40.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
So
probably more like $100 on a restaurant list.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
No, it's a serious
but it should
wine.
Be
it's a serious wine. Yeah. I think it deserves the accolades we're giving it. And, again, it's in a Burgundian bottle. It's got a very nice cork, and it belies all the things that you're thinking about Austria when you think cheap and cheerful Grüner Veltliner. This is a Grand Reserva. It's a 2009 vintage.
2009 Grand Reserve.
And what's the production of this wine? How many bottles do you make?
You're asking me too many questions here now. Numbers.
Estimates are fine.
How many can you sell? No.
I think we
those are apples and oranges. Yeah.
No, Tony Bauer makes a very small amount of this.
Yeah.
I think if he makes like 200 six packs a year of this wine.
I just think it's really, as you brought up, the point of it has no oak, but it has this really inherent richness, and you really get that expression of the varietal itself. It's unique.
And
yeah.
Really what I wanted to show here with this lineup is that Grüner Veltliner has different expression. Mm-hmm. Not just the Haariger wines people are known
for. Sure, yeah.
You can go from light, easy, to medium, to full-bodied.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm out of time, so give it to somebody else.
No, we're gonna wrap it up. But this has been so enlightening, and I'm really happy to have these wines on a hot day. And this is just another in a series of our Austrian wine.
Bring them on.
Yeah. Let's drink more of them.
Drink Austrian.
And Steininger, actually, I had the first time I was turned on to Steininger was at. Locium,
the wine spa
and museum.
Did you get the grapeseed massage?
I didn't actually stay for a treatment. I was in the museum, and we did a nice tour of the Cove downstairs, and I picked up this from the shop there. And
you can't pin down Aaron for more than an hour. I mean, you know.
For a massage, actually, that
you
is quite
do.
Possible.
I think she will do it.
Especially if it's grape skins. But anyway, that was where I came about it. And then when I found out Brian was bringing them in, I got really excited. I think I cherished that bottle of Grüner in my basement for quite some time before drinking it. But a beautiful bottle, those cubical sort of design on the label was something
and
that
caught
my eye.
Now you've had the Loisium with us. Now.
Yeah. Well, it's Stephen Hull, a New York architect, who built this whole... and he actually, at first when he came, he said, I do city quarters in Beijing and I don't do wineries, but
okay.
I like wine. Uh-huh. And after, if you look at the bottle on the side, June 11, 2001 at 4 a.m., he put this drawing on a paper napkin.
Oh, really?
And now, this is his favorite wine, the Loisium Grüner Veltliner.
Oh, I'm sure that and paper napkin was Grüner fueled. Yeah,
exactly.
At 4 in the morning.
Go
so
out and search
cool.
for that wine. It's
yeah.
delicious.
So is that museum still sort of in play in Austria?
The museum is
yeah.
fully going.
Yeah.
I mean, everything above ground is new world and modern.
Yep.
And And underground, you can go back to 1924, how wine used to be made. And then eventually you end up at the Steininger Winery.
Uh-huh.
And then you come back up, and then they have a shop where you can buy wines from the region. And then if you stay there, there's the wine spa, the swimming pool in the middle of the vineyard.
It's pretty cool.
So, Klaus, give a shout-out for where our listeners can find that website or URL for that.
Well, kwselection.com is very easy for my website to find. Barter House is my distributor in the city. Kurt Gutenbrunner, KJ Group, has been supporting me for a long time.
And Wolfgang.
And
Arthur.
Wolfgang up at Seasonal.
Had
his food. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, retail. There's quite a few shops in town. I don't want to mention one because I know I'm going to forget two and they're going to be very upset with me. But like I said, if you don't find KW Selection, you are the customer and they're going to listen to you more than they listen to me.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming in, Klaus.
Thank you,
it's
Klaus.
Been amazing today.
Yeah.
This is your host, Brian DeMarco, with your co-host, Ms. Aaron
Fitzpatrick.
And this is another episode of Unfiltered. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thank you.
See
Cheers.
You in Austria.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Ripper's, Boardwalk 86. Free party!